Well, happy Shabbat, everyone. Let's hope that we have no glitches today. I assume that the two gentlemen on hold there are Larry and Kirk. How are you, fellas?
Yes. Good evening. Doing just fine.
I'm doing good. Everything's good.
Hi,
how are you doing, Kirk?
Good. A long time no here, Larry. Haven't talked to you since last week. How's the...
Yes.
On the battle.
Well, you know, I had to restructure everything. You know, the way they're kind of pounding small business these days, you gotta work at it. That's all I'd tell anybody.
Sure.
And you know, yeah, and as I was not on the phone actually doing a lot of the work, I just saw the profits, you know, dwindle. So I had to get back on and do what I do and do it 10 hours a day. You know.
You know, that's not uncommon. It's, I can tell you that during my last business, I noticed a culmination of a trend, one that I never wanted to encounter again. And that speaks really to the decay of humankind as we are moving towards this last Yovel. And it was that during the first business that I had, I hired a number of people, and upon close examination through thick and thin, there was about one or two in ten of those that I hired were capable of doing the job, wanted to do the job, and were committed to working hard and to working honestly and doing what was the right thing for the company that employed them. By the time that I had started my second business, my experience was quite different, that about half of those that I hired would just as soon cheat me as they would serve the interests of the company. And that a much smaller percentage were actually competent and actually sought to earn their compensation. And lastly, we got to a third group when I started my third company, and there I found out that, well, the majority, about 80%, given the chance to be honest or dishonest, to work in favor of the company, to earn their compensation or work against it, were dishonest. And so... Man, I feel your
it's pain. An amazing. It's what happens here is there's just not that it's important, but a lot of money shoveled out the door, and a lot of SEO, which is an expensive proposition. And what happens today is people really don't have the foresight to understand if that company's not around, you don't have a job anymore.
No,
you know. And that's a problem.
But folks feel entitled. They have no sense of values. They're not taught the ethics of business. And so it is extremely difficult today to hire people and expect them to actually earn the wage that you're providing.
That it's an absolute truth. You know, when I was a trainer for Gallup as well as their top interviewer in the world, and that means in over thousands of people. When we would run what's called a perceiver, less than 10% could be hired. And when you were hired, nobody even saw you. It's because you passed a perceiver on a telephone. Nobody even saw you. And what would happen is 1 in 10 would come in, and there would be a class of 30. And the way the operation at Gallup worked was it was based on a fill-your-bucket mentality. You know, most people come to work. By the time they leave, they're parched. Everybody's been dipping in their bucket. Everything's negative. Well, they did the exact opposite. And I'll tell you, they do a good job of it. Everything's positive. You're a winner, you know, no matter what, even at that level, you know. But you didn't have bosses. You did have a matrix, and it was a production matrix. And this is how much, you know, had to be done within 40 hours or 35 hours. They gave you 35 hours. And then after you exceeded that production limit, Then suddenly all that became 2 and 3 and 4. And after recording you, and I was a level 52 interviewer, I don't think they may have had 1 or 2 people in the world higher, but then all your base hours were worth a lot more. And so just as an interviewer, if you went in and you really put the time in a very fun environment where you didn't have a boss, where you didn't have hours, where you could leave anytime you wanted, come in anytime you wanted, and leave anytime you want. And if you didn't want to come in for a day, you didn't have to make an excuse. You just didn't come in. Now, that's as much freedom as you're going to get in any job today.
Yeah.
You know, you could make, you know, and this is back in the 90s, 80, 90,000 a year. And be in a really fun atmosphere. Oh, I did it. I loved it. You know, when I left, I left. But out of these 30 people, say, that would be hired, within 3 months, there might be one left. I was astounded.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it.
So here's the best job you could ever draw up, and you couldn't keep employed.
Yeah.
It strikes me that it's quite similar to the experience that a farmer, friend of mine, my eldest son's brother-in-law, manages, I think it's 1,000 acres of apple orchards in Pennsylvania. And he works 6 days a week. He's an extraordinarily hard worker. He works, you know, almost 11 and a half months a year. Very difficult job. And his experience is that he can't hire Americans, that he has yet to find a single American that he can hire in the apple orchard that will last even half a season.
Yeah, well, there's actually another side to this, and it's you know, there's always been bums, and I mean that, people that just want to live off other people. There's always been bums, and that's what I call them. That isn't pointing the finger at the size of anybody's wallet. That's not what determines a bum. But there's another side to this equation, which is the people buying from me. I had, and this is a true story, there might be, I don't know, 40 engine companies nationwide or something doing what I do. And I have the fewest complaints in 3 years of shipping used engines and remanufactured engines, mostly used, to people I do not know. I've got 13 complaints. 13. That's unheard of. Nobody can do that.
Right.
But I did. And I have. I actually have a complaint, and I'm going to say this, and just it goes to the character of the bum today. A young man ordered a 42,000-mile, that's what I shipped, a 42,000-mile Mazda engine. And this didn't just come from anywhere. This came from a vendor of mine that specializes in nothing but Mazda. Shipped it to this kid, and 10 minutes later, we have a head gasket issue. It blows. Now, see, your car doesn't just sit there and the head gasket blow. I'll guarantee any of us tonight, every night we're in the chat room, and every night we're not driving our car, your head gasket doesn't just blow, because it takes pressure and heat to do that.
Right.
Typically, at installs, you will have people that really, you know, in certain cases, don't even know what they're doing. I've heard of people that actually installed Cadillac engines with water, as an example. Well, 10 minutes after this $950 engine gets installed, the head gasket blows. Tells me right there he didn't burp the system. But I was a son of a bitch, and I should die, and I shipped him junk, and on and on and on. And I said, and my wife, Yalda, heard a kid crying in the background. She said, just go ahead and take care of it. Anyone else in the United States in this business would have said, take it out, ship it back, I'll refund you your money. And they would have been within their rights to do it. I said, I'll tell you what, I'll fix it. I spent an hour and a half calling around. I find a guy with an A-plus rating in the BBB, 28 years experience in his neighborhood, and have the engine. I said, I'm gonna have it picked up. He's going to install a new head gasket. This guy was doing this for $700. I only sold
$900 engine.
Yeah. Guess the answer I got from him. No, you're not, mister. You're going to put that at the dealership.
Now, that's like saying you're going to get robbed.
I said, how much they want over at your dealership? He goes, $1,000. I said, go ahead and do it. Have them call me. I'll pay it. So this was what they call charity, I guess.
Right.
And so you would think that the kid would write this astounding report on my BBB talking about this, I was treated like gold. He wrote a complaint. And today, that's what you're really dealing with. You're dealing with people of entitlement.
Yes.
They don't have to think.
They have no responsibility.
Yeah. I mean, you're
no
pretty responsible to have an idiot put your engine in for you, weren't you? You know, I mean, yeah. And that's where we're at today. So to watch all these different angles coming and going, you can believe me, in a given day, by the end of the day, I can feel pretty beat up. And that's just how it goes. I mean, but that's what it takes to get through today. You have to work twice as hard as you used to. Simple as that.
Yeah, I would be stand corrected when I say that my problem was, and the reason I didn't get back into business, was I couldn't hire people that I could trust, that were competent, that would earn the compensation that was paid to them. I would go one step further. I couldn't trust my customers.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. That's half the problem. That's right.
Yeah, my single biggest adversary in my second-to-last business happened to be Walmart. So I know what it means to be in a position where your customers cheat, lie, steal, take advantage. I mean, it's difficult for me to walk into a retail store today because most of them, I know, have treated my business and other businesses dishonestly. So we are in a situation where mankind at large has fallen.
Well, you know, that is what he talks about, this last generation, in a word picture. He says they're leeches.
Mm-hmm.
And
they are.
And that is prophetic, folks. I mean, it's designed to be prophetic. That's what it was about.
Yeah. Well, let me try to balance the universe just a little bit. My
okay.
Customers come and bring cookies.
I love those guys.
I forget to charge them. They write their own bills up, and tell us I'm busy, and they just So y'all got to get in art business. It's the problem, see?
Yeah. Okay. See, you've got nice customers. They're standing in line.
Well, they're
part
old
of your
people
group.
Too. A lot of them.
Yeah.
Old.
How many employees do you have?
I don't have any anymore.
Oh.
I used to have five teachers and a part-time, and of course, I have, between Terry and I, we do everything now. It's a small business now. But.
Yeah, you can trust your wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, whether it be the police, the judicial system, politicians, religious leaders, we're dealing with a very, very corrupt and entitled mentality out there where almost no one accepts responsibility.
Here's a description for you, Yada. A generation that will be pure and clean in their own eyes and yet not washed of their filth and excrement. A generation lofty and exalted in their own eyes. And why are their eyelids raised. That,
wow.
That, you know, that gets us right there. That's where we're at. And
it's
going to
Jeremiah.
Be the majority. That's actually a Masal. 30,
okay.
12, 13.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The 30s. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in the
30s. It's 30s. Just a... It's, when he's talking about this last generation, it's ugly. On every level.
Yep, and we're more than halfway through the last of the Yobels.
I know. I got my statement last year, and just my credit card fees, okay, just processing fees, are over $80,000.
Okay.
And you sit there and you look at that, and if you try to get help at that end, like you think something might be theft or something like that, boy, guess what, guys? You don't get any help. So you're literally down to guessing on a phone before you ship somebody a $3,100 engine.
As to whether or not that credit card is really going to be his valid. Because if it's not valid, the credit card company takes no risk.
Well, yeah, so say it's a stolen number, right. They take no risk. None at all. None at all. It's just a really wild ride these days.
And charge you a 3% processing fee.
Four.
Wow.
4%. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's with a 710 credit score, so you ain't going to do any better. In my because they look at it as it's a high-risk business. Sure it is, because you won't give any if I call you, the bank, and say, Charlie James is trying to order a $3,100 engine here. Can you tell me if it's true? Can you give him a call? Nope, I'm sorry. We're not allowed to do that. Oh, wow. They get you coming and going, man. I've gotten good at filtering out the thieves. I've gotten very good at that.
No, I was never very good at it either. And I can tell you that when we were involved in the internet business with Value America, there was a period of time where about a quarter of the business that we did was fraudulent. It was fraud.
How much?
Yeah.
A quarter?
And you had that was a quarter of the business of orders that we took in was fraudulent. It was people with stolen credit cards, social security numbers, the whole nine yards, and it was fraudulent. And so you had to come up, the hardest part of the business was coming up with ways of mitigating the fraud.
Right. Yeah, you do. Now, I've got some good ways at this point, but I got to tell you, there's another side even further than that. This is insane, but this goes right back to the employee. Yalda goes through the bank records starting at, probably 7 in the morning. We might do 20 transactions. We're spending, and people are charging us, and these are charges coming from different places. And she finds $400 in coffee spent last night. $400 in coffee. So we call the bank right away and say, no, this is fraud. And, they remove it. And it was from, who's the big coffee people out in Washington?
Starbucks.
Anyway. Starbucks, yeah. So they their number's there. So we call them and say, don't, we're assuming that they, the card wasn't swiped. It had to be an internet order. Don't ship that. We didn't order it. To save them their $400 that they're not going to get. This was just decency. Person on the other end says, we're shipping it anyway.
He didn't even go to his supervisor or anything?
No, they wouldn't. Now we're going to, that's an order, and it gets shipped, and that's it, guy. Okay, I said, so you're going to lose, whatever the actual
he's
cost.
He's not going to lose anything. His company's going to lose it, and he doesn't.
Yeah, that's what, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but that's the, that's trying to help somebody prevent fraud. You can't even do it. It's really weird.
It is a world that has been indoctrinated to be all things opposed to the Torah, to the covenant, to exercising moral judgment. It is the antithesis of what Yahweh is calling us to. just the opposite. You know, we deserve.
I watched a movie. Watched a movie a few weeks ago. I really wish I would have written the name of it down. I don't even remember it. And you know, this movie kind of started out kind of strange. There's this book that falls off this bookshelf, and there's a watch. And what ends up happening? She keeps telling people there's this ghost in her room. And what it really was that her father had traveled outside time and was just trying to get her attention. He was now outside the boundary of time.
Here we go.
And he could.
Yeah, it's Interstellar. Interstellar. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. I thought, this is a pretty lovely, that's it. Yeah, I thought, and in the end, she's dying of old age talking to her dad, you know, on his hospital bed.
Right.
But I thought, you know, if people could really begin to comprehend what it is that Yah was asking of us and why,
right.
It might be a decent movie
right.
to watch.
And how, yeah, and how space relates to time, and how mm-hmm. Yah's testimony relates to time, and how light relates to time, and all of these dimensions, and how things are relative. It would make, the more you understand, the better God looks, the more real he looks. Let's go ahead and start with where we were, where we left off last week. It was Shemoth names, Exodus 19:13. It says, with the drawing up and the extension of, this is Baal Masak, then following after the guidance and leadership of, the ram's horn of Yah, Ha Yobel, they should of their own volition always and genuinely choose to ascend by being lifted up in association with the mountain. All right, lots of things there. If you recall, just prior to this, Yah associated the Yobel with those things that happened on Mount Sinai. That he talks about how on the third day, Yah will descend and approach before the eyes of all of the people. And that on the third day, they should choose to, and be prepared to be established. That on the third day, that they should arrive with their clothing cleaned, to be a people set apart, so that they can appear clean and perfect before God. And he was talking about how his word is now with them, and that his light is nearby. And now, in the context of all of that, he's saying, with the drawing up and extension of the ram's horn of Yah, they should of their own volition always and genuinely choose to ascend by lifting up in association with the mountain. In this particular case, the mountain that is providing the approach to heaven isn't Mount Moriah.
Yeah, it's Sinai, where the Torah was.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's because the means to being lifted up to Yahweh is the Torah, and the mountain that it was given in association with is Sinai, Mount Horeb. Now, the challenge of this is, how do you translate Ha Yobel? Now, I can tell you for certain, Ha Yobel is not the Jubilee. I don't know what a Jubilee is.
I've never seen it either. I've always seen Yobel.
Yeah. Right. Well, if you read an English Bible, they change Yobel to Jubilee. Now, I don't know why they do that, because Jubilee is capitalized, so it's meant to be a title. It's meant to be a name. But how is Jubilee a translation or a transliteration?
Yobel. It's not
and
even close.
And since Jubilee doesn't seem to have a name. It's in the areas of Roman Catholicism and in the kingdoms that were originally grew out of Roman Catholicism, kings, queens, and popes celebrate jubilees. They're every 50 years. And so they will celebrate a jubilee. And it's like taking just this one little nugget from Yahweh, twisting and changing the name, but leaving an aspect of the timing. 50. And that's what they have done with the Jubilee and made it a political and religious spectacle, having no association with the Yobel years of Yahweh. So as we strive to understand how should we translate Yobel, I've come to the conclusion, and I'm not claiming to be right, I'm just claiming this is my thinking on it. And, you know, if you have different thinking, then you may be right and I may be wrong, but let me at least explain my thinking. There are some 50 words, names in Hebrew that begin with Y-O-W. Yob has to be one of them. Yob is Yahweh's lamb. Yoel is another. There are 50 of these names. And so since there's some 50 of these names that begin with Yod-Wah, it's pretty obvious to me that this is, like the rest of them, it is a contraction. Let me give you a few of them. There's Yoab. Yah is our father. Yoel. Yah is God. Yob. Cry out to Yah. Yobal. Yah leads and carries. Yokah. Yah gives life. Yokol. Yahweh is able. Yonah. Yah's dove. Yonathan. Yah gives. Yosef. Yah increases. Yoed, Yah's meeting. Yorah, Yah instructs. And Yotham, Yah perfects. So Yobel, is obviously among these 40 to 50 names that includes Yahweh's signature in the midst of it. And it's not like these names I just read an example of maybe a dozen out of the 40 or 50. But those names are used 700 times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. So we have a pattern that is absolutely undeniable. And therefore, since Yahweh is consistent, since he's established a pattern, since there's 40 to 50 names, I think there's actually 40 of them, which is a very significant number for Yahweh, and that those 40 names appear 700 times, another significant number to Yahweh, I don't think it's a coincidence. And therefore, we should look to the pattern that Yahweh has established, since he's so darn consistent, to define each word. And so a word that ends with El means Almighty or God, and it's God or Almighty in the singular, and Yob is combines Yahweh's name and Lamb. So I came to the conclusion that the single best rendering of the name is Yahweh's
Godly
Lamb
year.
Is God.
Yeah, Yahweh's Lamb is God. You sure?
Yeah.
No, you're right.
That's
you're
what
right.
The etymology of the word suggests. Now, is it okay just to transliterate it since it's the title as Yobel? Sure. But does Yahweh have any titles that are meaningless?
No.
Not one. And so since he has established this pattern of 40 names that begin with Yoh, and they appear 700 times, I'm going to say this is consistent with the pattern. So one of the things, too, about Yobel, in terms of defining what Yobel represents, is to realize that it's used interchangeably with the shofar, which is a ram's horn trumpet, thereby associating Yobel with the power and the message of Yahweh's Lamb, because it's a ram's horn trumpet. We also witness, and you know, we know that the ram was caught by the horn in the thicket on Mount Moriah in the dress rehearsal for Pesach Passover. We also witness Yahweh connecting his Yobel with the first four Mikrei, Pesach, Shavua, Teruah, and Kippurim. Now, two of these steps to God's home are adroitly linked to the Lamb of God, while the other two reflect the work of the Spirit of God. But here's the most important connection. The Lamb of God, Yahweh's Lamb, who is God, is Yahusha. What was Yahusha's first recorded public statement?
When he went into the synagogue and he read out of Yeshayah.
Yes, he did. And you know what passage he read out of Yeshayah?
He went to the Yobel.
Yeah. Right. In fact, we're going to go. That's where we're going next. He read out of the when Yeshayah cited Yah's Lamb is God, predicting that Yah's Lamb is God, and then described the nature of the physical manifestation of Yahweh. He said, "You are witnessing this in your midst." In other words, he said, "I am the Yobel." So if Yahusha says, "I am the Yobel," if Yahweh through Yeshayah presents the Yobel in terms that are indistinguishable from Yahusha, and since Yahusha is presented as the Passover lamb of Yahweh, I'm going with Yobel means Yahweh's lamb is God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, while I could be reading something into it, you know, you make the connections. It's a pretty hard case to refute.
That's pretty strong. I didn't even realize that. I don't know why, but that's right there.
So it's more than just a year. Now, what happened in the Yobel year of 4,000 Yah? Did we see the arrival of Yahweh's Lamb?
Yeah.
Did Yahweh's Lamb do something important?
He set us free. Paid us price. He redeemed
us. He fulfilled the Moed Mikre, didn't he?
Yeah, the
first four of them.
Rest, yeah.
And in 2,000 years before that, in the Yobel year of 2,000 Yah, did we have a sighting of the Yobel?
Mm-hmm. That was Abraham. Right. Abraham.
Where Yahweh said that, Abraham, do not take your son. Spare your son. I will provide the sacrifice. And there the Yobel caught. Yeah, it's a ram's horns caught in the thicket. Are we going to see anything associated with the Yobel, Yahweh's Lamb is God, in the Yobel year of 6,000 Yah?
Absolutely. He's going to come and do it again and save his people.
He's coming back. Fulfilling the last two Moed Mikre.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a real strong association between the Yobel and Yahweh's sacrificial lamb, the diminished manifestation of Yahweh. I'll go one step further. What is the Yobel about? What are the two distinguishing factors associated with the Yobel?
You set people free. Well, everything is returned.
And you forgive them.
Well,
yeah, the third is you return to the land. But the first two is all slaves are freed, all debts are forgiven. Right? And the land is returned to
The other one has to be there's still more, because you have to have enrichment and empowerment too.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is really you're doing a Yobel count, you know, for matzah, right? To get to Shabuah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But aren't we? Let's just look at the benefits of the covenant. Don't the benefits of the covenant release us, forgive us of our debts, and set us free?
Yes.
From not only death, but from corruption, from man's institutions, liberating us. I mean, isn't that the whole purpose of the first? For Yobel to do exactly the things that are promised in the Yobel are accomplished in the first four Moed Mikre.
I found three other meanings where it says the flow like a stream. It can also be a water or anything liquid.
Another one was the trumpet, and there was associated with the flowing of air to make a sound.
Okay, and so let's look at the first one. Let's go. Okay. We'll go first two, and then we'll go to the verse.
Sure.
The first one, flowing. What is the basis of the name Jerusalem, where the Yobel dress rehearsal occurred in the Yobel year of 2000, where the fulfillment of the Moed Mikre occurred in year 4000, and where Yeshua will return in year 6000, all in Jerusalem? What does Jerusalem mean?
It means knowledge flows within
the guidance flows regarding salvation and restoration.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's from Yara and Shalom, and Yara is the source from which guidance and teaching flows.
Which is Torah.
All right. So the first definition you gave of Yobel is the same definition of Jerusalem, source. Yeah, it's the basis of Torah, source from which guidance and direction flows. So Yobel is therefore being equated with the Torah and with the Torah's fulfillment in Jerusalem. Isn't Yosha the living manifestation of the Torah?
Absolutely.
Right.
Right. Okay, so the first one is confirmed. It again points to the sacrificial lamb of God. The second one was what?
The flowing of a body of water.
Well, that was the first one. The second one?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, that was the sound. The second one was the sound. It's like a flowing air that makes a sound, the trumpet.
All right. All right. The breath, which is the flowing of air, is a soul, nefesh.
Mm-hmm.
Same. It's always breath and soul are the same word in Hebrew. What is the soul of Yahweh? It's the soul of Yahweh as Yosha that went into Sheol on our behalf. And when we're talking about the fulfillment of Teruah, which is the sounding of the trumpet, it's the breath, our air, our breath, our nefesh, resonating through the ram's horn. Another direct connection to Yahshua.
Mm-hmm.
What's the third one?
The third one was kind of interesting because we've talked about this, a couple of years ago we were on the phone talking about the wealth aspect, and it says the flowing of wealth.
Larry, you were looking for enrichment?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there it is. I mean,
there you go.
Yeah, you knew that had to be there because it's Yahuwah. I mean, what would be the point, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, and it's the first four mikre that are represented in this way, all fulfilled in year 4000. Yeah. So, the Yobel is the Lamb, that Yahweh's Lamb is God. Now, with this in mind, and recognizing that Yobel is comprised of a common abbreviation of Yahweh's name, Yoh, there is ever reason to see contractions of the words for ram, which is A-L, and for lamb, Kebes, completing Yobel. So, seeing that the Ram of God that opens the doorway to heaven is the A-L, and the sacrificial lamb is the Kebes. Those are the additive, those are the things that have been added to Yoh to create Yobel. All right, so now let's go to Yahshua, since this is the statement that Yahusha cited, and you know, by way of introduction, Yashayahu reminded us that Yahweh, in the role of Savior, has a name. He has a title. He has a purpose. Yahweh, speaking prophetically to Yisrael, provided a long and revealing preamble to the words that Yahusha quoted to initiate his mission. Now, this is the first recorded statement from Yosha. So this is
how that discussion begins. And by the way, you know, it's just like when Yosha on the upright pole of Pesach says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Mm-hmm. And he doesn't cite the rest of the psalm. What he's doing is saying, if you're inquisitive, if you're interested in knowing who I am and why I'm saying this, maybe you'll go read the psalm that I was quoting. Well, the same thing's true here with Yashaya. He didn't quote the entire chapter of Yashaya, but he quoted enough of it that if you're the least bit inquisitive, you're going to read the whole context surrounding the portion of the testimony that he quoted. And that's what we're going to do. So it begins, Ga'al, Ge'ulim, the redeeming one, the kinsman and close relative who restores, will come and enter Zion, the sign along the way, and come unto those in Jacob who turn away from rebellion, declares Yahweh. As for me, this is my covenant relationship with them, says Yahweh. Wow. I love this stuff. Okay, the redeeming one. To be redeemed is a form of salvation that I actually am comfortable with. Ga'al means to redeem and to restore. It's based on the Hebrew verb to roll away. And it means that Yahweh has rolled away our failings, our inequity, our flaws, so that we are purchased, we are redeemed, purchased with a ransom, and restored. So he is announcing long before Yahusha came onto the scene that he is the redeeming and restoring one, and that would be Yahweh. He's going to come and enter Zion. Zion, isn't Zion one of the three mountains in Jerusalem?
Mm-hmm.
And don't all three of those mountains have a very revealing name?
Yeah,
like, isn't the first one Moriah, which means revere Yah?
Yeah, Moriah.
The second one, Mount of Olives, which speaks of the spirit of Yah.
Set apart spirit. Yeah.
Set apart spirit, yeah.
Right. The light of Yah. And isn't the third one Zion? Which is the signpost along the way.
I don't understand how somebody's not a Zionist.
Yeah.
I don't get that. I mean,
Yahweh is a Zionist. Yahweh is a Zionist.
I've always said, he's a Zionist. I'm on with that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, one other thing I want to throw out here.
You're opposed to Yahweh. I mean,
why
would you not want to read the signs along the way? Why wouldn't you want to, once you've come to read the signs, why wouldn't you want to be standing by those signs and say, hey, I'll read this to you, so I don't want you to miss it?
I don't want to be.
I've got a question for you guys.
Don't want to be any part of this.
Okay, you obviously, and you did this some time ago, that's why I wasn't shocked, mm-hmm. where you'd figured out that, Yahusha, his first public speech went right to the Yovel.
Right to it.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is an interesting point here. Because you think of the millions of Christians out there, any of them even understand that? I mean, supposedly.
No.
They're following the Masi Yah. I mean, they completely, cut the cord between Yahweh and Yahweh saves. But, still, he went right to Yashaya and went right into the Yovel in his first speech. That would be pretty important.
Yeah, this was now 3 years before the Yovel. So I'm going to tell you, when I first came to that realization, I was real comfortable and real uncomfortable. And it wasn't until very recently that I became real comfortable, period. And let me explain the challenge that I had originally. It was obvious in reading what the Yovel represented that Yosha was the means to enable the purpose and the promise of the Yovel. He came to liberate us, to set us free, and because Yahweh is the great liberator, and to forgive our debts, returning us to the land that belongs to Yahweh, his realm. That part was obvious, so it was interesting to see him saying that, you know, the citing that first and foremost. But then he said, what you are witnessing its fulfillment on this day. And I was, my discomfort was, no, we're not. We're 3 years away from its fulfillment. Year 4,000 Yah is the Yobel year, not year 3,997 Yah. And it wasn't
right
until quite recently that I realized when he said, you're witnessing its fulfillment on this day, that Yobel...
Yeah, he was calling himself the Yobel.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So, yeah, that's what I missed. Because
that's
I didn't
strong,
really understand the name. But once you
that's
understand
strong,
the name, yeah. He's saying, I'm the Yobel. What he's saying, I'm the source from which guidance flows from God regarding the Torah. I'm the living manifestation of the Torah. I am the Lamb of Yahweh.
Yeah, kind of in your face. And also, yeah, and you're up here where Yahweh's talking about, you know, on the third day, you know, he's gonna be with you. But same exact thing Hosea said. I mean, exactly what Hosea said.
Right. And keep in mind that everybody that would have heard him say that knew, in fact, that year 33 was not a Yobel year.
Mm-hmm.
They all knew that 33 was the Yobel year, every one of them. And so for them to have heard him say, you're on this day, you're witnessing this fulfillment, they would have come to realize what we just came to realize, is that he's announcing that he is the Yobel. That Yah's Lamb is God, he's announcing he's the Yobel.
I'm sure it freaked out a few of them.
Oh, my.
I mean, this is, I beg your pardon, you know, he's, you know,
yeah.
I can see the looks on the faces. But where else, if Jerusalem is the place, or Jerusalem is the place where the message is flowing from, where else could he flow from except his lips, because they certainly
yeah
are preaching it.
And the Torah is the place where guidance flows.
Yeah.
He's announcing the living manifestation of the Torah, the literal Lamb of Yahweh.
Yeah.
That's a powerful statement. So, and he's saying that he is, therefore, the Redeeming One, will come and enter into Zion. Well, didn't he, as the Redeemer, enter Zion?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he did.
He will come unto those in Jacob. Did Yosha come to the Greeks? Did he come to the Romans?
No.
No, there's some Romans that came to him, but did he come to the Romans? No.
No.
Yeah.
Did he come to the Arabs?
No.
No.
Did he come to the Africans? Did he come to the Europeans?
No.
No. Who did he come to? Did he ever once take a step out of
Israel? No.
And what did Yahweh rename Jacob?
Israel.
Yeah. Now, he still uses the name Jacob,
mm-hmm,
because the name Jacob is a powerful name if you can, view it symbolically. It means to dig in one's heels.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob means the one who digs in his heels. A person that digs in their heels...
they're a pretty determined person is what they are.
They're determined. They're determined.
Yeah.
They're not going to waver one way or the other. You're not going to pull them away. You cannot pull a person who digs in their heels away without a hell of a fight. And a person that's digging in their heels, you walking, digging your heels, man, you're standing upright, you're going forward. If you want to pivot, you don't pivot on your heels. You don't turn on your heels. When you're digging in your heels, man, you're walking straight ahead. There's a straight path to Yahweh, and Jacob's name defines those who do not waver from the straight and narrow way that Yahweh provided. It's a powerful name.
And it's also a powerful point. And it's
yes
a powerful point. Because what Yahweh really talks about, and this is on the same subject, I'm not trying to get off the path here, because it is the path that counts. You know, Yahweh gives us a particular way to be humble,
mm-hmm,
and he says it's to follow
his prescribed prescriptions to live.
Right.
You know, now, if there's, you know, we have all these stars out there, we've got society, we've got everything else telling us another lie, you know, there's so many different paths to God. Right? I mean, we've all heard that nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we're to believe the creator of the universe, then there's only one path to him. And we just got to stay on that path. We have to be humble to do that. That's where humble is defined.
We can't get egotistical and think that we can modify it, that God will accept our aberrations, our changes to it, that God cares enough about our opinions to modify his way based upon our proclivities. That's egotistical.
Yes, and each one of those things make him, was he to do that, each one of those would make him out to be a liar. Everything he said.
Right.
You know, because Yada thought this, and Yada said this, or Larry said that, or Kirk said that, then you can go ahead and do it. I'll make myself out to be a liar.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's not true.
Why do we constantly say that this is my interpretation of this word and what this word means in this context, and I'm going to give you the reasons from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms that causes me to come to this conclusion that this is the meaning and the message of this term in this context, just like we did Yobel. Going through Yahweh's testimony to put the pieces together, but always with the statement in advance. I'm going to share with you how I've come to understand this. I could be wrong.
I don't think you are.
Last thing you want to do is you don't want to present yourself as always right. We are we're
not the teacher.
Right. We're not the teacher. We're learners. Don't want to claim that we're here to modify Yahweh's text or that we are the perfect messenger of the text. I think we're all more credible, actually. I think we're more credible, not less credible, in speaking for Yahweh when we say we could be wrong, but let me share with you the thought process that I used to come to this conclusion. And if you come to a different one, so long as your methodology is the same, that you rely solely on Yahweh's nature and word, then we don't have to agree. And I think that makes you more credible, not less credible. I think the people that claim to be right typically aren't. And the people that say, you know, I'm open to correction here, chances are telling you the truth more often than not.
Yeah, well, you know, you said something the other day about you used to put everything on the Ruach. I'm not that bright, the Ruach is, and then you find out you made mistakes.
Right.
But you know, that's a path right, because it is the Ruach working with the Nesama that provides understanding. Now, you may have had half of an understanding,
right,
okay, on something you may have said or something. You know, it's this, but the Ruach, it was still directing you. And if that weren't true, then you would have stayed on what you originally said to begin with. So.
Plus, he dug his heels in and kept going, didn't he?
Right. You dig in your heels and you go where the words lead. And when
I'm just saying,
Yahweh, you don't waver. Mm-hmm. So Jacob's important here. And you notice the Redeemer came to those in Jacob. The Redeemer came to those who dig in their heels, who walk that same narrow path, who don't allow themselves to be blown or pulled one way or another. That's why he used Jacob here. And he says, those who turn away from, those who walk away from, who disassociate with Pisha. Pisha is all forms of rebellion. It's, you know, opposition to God. And so, in the context of redemption, in the context of Jacob, in the context of Zion, what we're hearing here is the Redeemer is for is the Redeemer is the signpost on the way, who came to those who do not waver from Yahweh's testimony, who dig in their heels regarding his path, who walk away from, who disassociate from man's rebellion against God. And all of that collectively is true. You can't just take one part of it. You want to be redeemed? You need to be one who shub pisha, one who disassociates from human rebellion. The institutionalized, pisha really is institutionalized political and religious rebellion. You need to disassociate from religion and politics, walk that narrow path, unwavering to Yahweh, and recognize that Yahusha is the signpost along the way. This was declared by Yahweh, and then Yahweh says, "As for me, this is my covenant with them," says Yahweh. Whoa, now, what do you think he means by the last statement? I mean, okay, he says, "I'm the redeeming one who will come and enter Zion for those in Jacob who turn away from institutionalized rebellion and opposition."
He's fulfilling his side of the contract.
Then he says, "To me, this is my covenant."
Mm-hmm.
What you're saying? You're saying that he is saying, "I'm here honoring my side of the agreement."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think there's more to it than that.
Well, there's always more.
Well, let me give you. I think you came up with half of it.
Okay.
Yes, he is saying that this is the way that I'm honoring my side of the agreement. I'm going to enable the five benefits of the covenant this way. Isn't this also, if you were to summarize the conditions to participate in the covenant, aren't they to rely on Yahweh as our Redeemer? Aren't they us to walk to Him along the path that He has provided to become perfect? Aren't they to observe what He has and closely examine what He has said and done?
All five, yeah.
Aren't we to, first and foremost, walk away from institutionalized
mm-hmm.
religion and politics?
Mm-hmm.
So when he says, "This is my covenant," he's not only telling you that he's signing his side of the bargain, "I'm going to fulfill and honor the covenant and my responsibility," isn't he also articulating our responsibilities?
Mm-hmm. It's a two-sided contract.
So the Yobel here, which is what is being presented, from Yahweh's perspective, represents the covenant. He's also saying the redemption is the covenant. The covenant is redemption. They are, so covenant, redemption, they're equal. Covenant equals redemption. When he says, "For me, as for me, this is my covenant," he's saying that covenant equals redemption. He is saying covenant equals Zion. Covenant equals and is Jacob. Covenant equals disassociating from, turning away from institutionalized rebellion against God. They are equivalent when he says, "This is my covenant." Did he say, "This is my new covenant"?
No.
"This is my replacement covenant"?
No.
"This is the covenant I made with Paul"?
Not likely.
This is the,
no.
As he said, "This is the covenant that I made with the Christian church, which rather than with Jacob is with Goyim."
No.
How do you square a Christian church with Goyim and them saving when Yahweh made this statement in Yeshayah?
Well, how could you square it anyway? They hate Jacob. I mean,
no kidding. Yeah, that was the God of Abraham. Ishak and Jacob, we don't know him. Then he goes on to say, "And my spirit will be upon you. My words, I will by way of association and relationship place in your mouth. And they will not depart from the mouths of your offspring or your children's children," says Yahweh, "from that time throughout all eternity." Okay. Wow. So is he not making some extraordinarily declarative statements here? Is he? Didn't he begin this by, I've gone out on a limb, and I'm happy to be proven wrong if I am wrong. I mean, this is, again, I don't think there's anybody else that's making this dramatic a claim. When Yahweh through Yahshua said a child is born and a son is given, I'm quite convinced that the child who was born was just a child, a human child. And the thing that made that child Yahusha, the thing that made that child God, is the same thing that makes us God's children. The set of
it was God's spirit on him. It was the
right. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's being declared here.
Oh, well, it's not a stretch. I mean, we already know that Sheol is defined by the absence of Yahweh's spirit.
Right.
The
reason I've come to this conclusion is not only is it stated here, but, Yahshua says a child is born into you, and a son is given. That's a powerful differentiation, that the child is simply born, the son is given, through the set-apart spirit. And then when you think about it, Yahusha, didn't he say that you'll recognize the spirit because the spirit comes from me? I mean, it's part of me. It is me. And then didn't he at the end give up that spirit so that God departed him, that it was just a man hanging there on the upright pole?
Mm-hmm.
So,
right. So that has to be. I mean, what you're saying has to be. You just said it. That's the difference. I mean, you have to know that. You have
right.
to know it because Yahweh's spirit can't be in Sheol. And
right.
where did Yahusha's nephesh go?
Right.
It went
Sheol.
To Sheol and acted as a ransom. So that's not Yahweh
right.
in there.
Right. Let me Yahweh's give you another one.
Man,
Let me give you another one. Just as God cannot die, which is why the spirit left Yahusha as the sacrificial lamb on Passover, if you cannot die and you're infinite, guess what else can't happen to you? God can't be born. God does not have a birthday. And so the child could be born, but the son was given. The son who was given was given by way of the Spirit of Yahweh coming upon that child. And so the Spirit of Yahweh could not be born. So Yahusha could not have been born as God with the Spirit, because God can't be born. He, Hayah, always has been. So anyway, this...
I don't doubt that, milliseconds after the birth, the Spirit was all over him. I don't doubt that at all.
Yeah, it might have been.
Yeah,
no,
it probably was.
Yeah, probably.
I'm sure.
I'm not even pointing. It has to be. I mean, he watched over him. The angels watched over him. He had the best DNA ever.
You're right.
Better than Shawa and Adam. So I mean, he had all the potential. He was the perfect choice to do this job. But the words are not going to flow out of his mouth, and he's not going to have his mission accomplished without a particular. Time when the Spirit absolutely takes over. So,
well, he clearly had a perfect father, and he had a perfect mother, not in Miriam, but in the set-apart spirit. And that created a perfect being.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, this is a clue that I think leads us to the conclusion that I've just shared. And the Spirit will be upon you. Now, what's interesting there is that suggests that this is something that is going to happen. The Spirit will be. So when Yahusha arrived, after his arrival as the child was born, the Spirit came to be upon him. Then the next part of this is also something that at least Christians have some inkling of, but they just can't finish the thought. They know that Yahusha is the Word of God. But they think the Word of God is their goddamn New Testament. But it isn't. The Word of God is the Torah. It's the Torah and prophets, and therefore, he says, my words, I will by association and relationship place in your mouth. Well, did Yosha ever quote the Christian New Testament?
No.
No.
He quoted the Torah. It hadn't been invented yet.
No.
He quoted the prophets. He quoted the Psalms.
Yep.
And so when it says that he was the Word of Yahweh, when Yahochanan said, and the Word became flesh, he's talking about the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, full stop. That's the Word of Yahweh.
When somebody says, I've come to fulfill the Torah, until you understand the Moed Mikra, you couldn't know what that means.
That's
you
right.
think it means, at that point, one thinks it means he runs around showing people how to be kind. That's what
yeah.
they think. You know, I mean, it's pretty trite, but it's true. That's got to be the thought.
Yeah, and of course, he wasn't kind. He was not kind. He wasn't kind almost ever was he, I mean, almost never is he depicted as kind. Even when he's performing miracles, he's not kind about it.
It's reluctant.
He cops an attitude even as he's performing miracles. He doesn't say, oh, you poor, person that's lame. I'm so sorry that you're lame. I feel your pain. I feel empathy.
Yeah, there's
for
some
you.
Point in there, isn't there where he says, if you're sick, you need a doctor.
Yeah, he's saying, hey, why'd you come to me? The other person said, why'd you touch me? Why are you here? Why are you doing? Why is this so important to you? And then he comes up with a statement. He said, listen, I only did this so that you would know that if I can do this trivial thing, then I can certainly do the bigger thing, which is to save your soul. And, you know, when people don't recognize him and it's obvious who he is, what he says, who are you? You idiot?
You stupid?
Are you just ignorant? Or, you know, they'll ask him a question. Is he nice? You know, that was a lovely question. That was really a very good question. I'm so glad that you asked that question. Boy, what a thoughtful person you must be. That let me see if I can answer that question. No, he says, why would you ask me that question? Well,
why don't you go read the Torah?
I'm not going to answer the question for it. Why don't you just read the Torah? What does it say? He wasn't nice. What did he say to the religious establishment? You're
bums.
Sons of vipers. You're bums. You're hypocrites. Yeah. What part of that is nice?
Dead man's bones, yeah.
Right. You know, when he's talking about the Christian church and he says, you know, you'll call me, those that are calling me Lord, Lord, not one of them is going to get into heaven. And he's going to say, I know, but you're bellyache and you're saying, you know, you did all these wonderful things. And I would say, get away from me. I don't even know you. How's that nice?
He describes Christians there. Nobody else does it. All those things he talks about, other than Christians, he flat out describes Christians there. Flat out.
Yeah.
You know, when I first walked in a church, I asked the preacher, I said, well, you know, what did they do 2,000 years ago? And, you know, well, you know, the guy in charge was in charge of doling out the food and they'd set up tables and feed the poor. I don't see that anywhere. I mean, do they just dream this stuff up? Because I don't see that anywhere. Is it righteous, perhaps? Is it decent, perhaps, that, you know, to help somebody down on their luck that's honestly trying? Yeah, I think it is. I think it's the right.
Yep.
I don't know what it is, but it's the right thing to do.
And you already had a plan for that. You know, you'd go to the storehouse and you could, but you had to participate in it.
Let me throw something at you guys that is that may be way, way out on a limb here. And if I'm on a limb again, you know,
you'll hear about
it. What I think is important is that we think about the possibilities, and even if this possibility isn't that which was primarily intended, I just want everyone to think about it.
Okay.
In the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, there is no, there are no chapters and verses. One thought moves from the other. Okay, so this says, as for me, this is my covenant with them, says Yahweh, and my spirit will be upon you. My words, by association and relationship, in your mouth. So, guys,
okay,
what do you think the possibility is that the Spirit he's announcing that as part of his covenant, that his Spirit is upon his covenant children, and that his words, by association, are in our mouths?
Well, they are.
Do you think that maybe that he's saying here that I am the one that redeemed you and restored you, children of the covenant, that I'm the one who came and entered this, as the signpost along the way, that I came as I promised to Jacob and to those of you who are part of the covenant and turned away from religion and politics, declares Yahweh, because this is my covenant with you, says Yahweh, and my spirit will be upon you. You know,
well, yeah, I think that's, yeah, he's talking, yes.
Talking to us.
Yeah, that. Yeah, that's right out
yeah.
there. Yeah, sure
right.
it is.
And what is it that
makes and in order to relate to us, he had to diminish himself. I mean,
right.
can you imagine being out there and in zone 7 somewhere, dimension 7,
yeah.
and you're talking to the piece of paper? You know, I mean, it's kind of hard,
but,
you know.
I want to throw this, the ultimate connection here, in which is that how are you and I, other than we're not perfectly Torah observant, and
well, we don't have the Torah in our heart.
How are you and I different than Yosha, a human body enveloped in the set apart spirit? Aren't we? Isn't the whole purpose of the covenant to make
like
us
him.
Like him? Isn't the reason that the day is mm-hmm. called Bakutim, firstborn children, is
mm-hmm.
that he was the first, and that we are all children like Yosha?
Mm-hmm.
That
all right.
just as he said. Didn't he say our father rather than just his father?
Mm-hmm.
So what I think he's saying here is that this is, the Spirit is on us, and therefore his words are in our mouth.
Well, there was certainly
well, yeah.
there, certainly there when Shimon Kepa started on the Pentecost.
Yeah.
I agree, but the only thing. The only difference
yeah.
is going to be that I didn't ransom anybody's soul.
You know? No, but isn't the entire purpose of the covenant to transform us, empower us, enrich us, perfect us, make us immortal, so and adopt us so that we are like the risen Yosha? Isn't the
yeah,
risen
otherwise
Yosha
there's no
exactly
point.
What Yah is trying to do with us? And going
yeah.
to do with us? Not trying, going to do with us.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was
and
we, kind of. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying we have a humble point of view and to say, you know, we don't want to have comparisons to Yosha because Yosha was perfect. But
yeah.
isn't, aren't we made perfect in God's eyes?
Well, he sees us as perfect. I mean,
isn't, you mean, okay, we don't make comparisons to Yosha because, you know, he was the perfect representative of Yahweh's word. Don't we try to represent Yahweh's word as accurately and completely as we can?
Yeah, that's the absurdity of Christianity. They don't even quote him. I mean, they only quote him when they need to quote him for whatever their motive is.
So I think when he's talking about your offspring
mm-hmm.
and your children's children, says Yahweh, from this point through all eternity, you can read this as in one of two ways, both of which are completely accurate. It is specifically speaking of Yosha, and it is generally speaking of all of Yahweh's covenant children.
You know, it was a funny thing that kind of came to me about, because I know I may have mentioned this to you, when we were talking about when you've often said he doesn't want these people in heaven, or if you're not on board, you cannot allow them to be in there, because when you empower somebody to the level that he's going to empower us, my gosh. If they're not on the same page, that would be the most horrible thing in the world. We will be more powerful than any Moloch.
Absolutely. Oh, much. Now,
so,
think
so
about
have
this. You know what ended this one? Remember the last one? He ended up equating everything that he said to his covenant so that his covenant is redeeming. It's the signpost along the way. it is for those who walk the straight and narrow path to Him and don't waver or veer mm-hmm. from it, those who turn away from corruption and rebellion in human institutions, and that those who approach Yahweh as God. This time he ends it by saying that that the children will be his through all eternity, but it's not just the children. It means that his spirit mm-hmm. will exist throughout all time, that his spirit will be upon us for all time, that his words will endure for all time, that his words, his testimony will be in our mouths for all time, that it will never depart from us, and our children will be his children for all time. Doesn't give you much room here to have a covenant that's been replaced with a new one,
mm-hmm.
does it?
No.
Or a God that was replaced with a new one.
So what do you not think you're right about?
Oh, that what I'm saying here is that if my conclusions are true, then we should look at ourselves as following Yosha, that we are that the difference between the risen Yosha and ourselves is nil. That the entire purpose of God diminishing himself was to lift us up so that we are like the risen Yosha. And that mm-hmm. all of this, while it is specifically descriptive of Yosha, it is also descriptive of us. This is how Yahweh views us.
Yeah, I don't find that radical or different. I mean,
well, the problem for many of us is that Yosha was so powerful, so articulate,
yeah.
so perfect, so marvelous.
Yosha had the spirit all over him.
Right, that we don't like, we feel that it's arrogant for us to say that, which applies to him also applies to us. But I don't think it's arrogant at all. I think that's the very concept that Yahweh envision. So I don't think it's arrogant for us to say we are like Yosha. This applies to him and it applies to us. And it doesn't apply anywhere.
Yeah, well, it's
to
not
us,
arrogant.
It does to him.
It's the reason he did it.
Right.
I mean,
the whole reason he did it.
He wasn't doing that for himself. He was doing that for us. I mean, yeah.
Correct.
Sure.
Correct. Correct.
I'm on board with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then it says, arise and stand up, become light. For your light has come. The glorious presence and manifestation of power of Yahweh appears, rises up, and shines like the light of the sun upon you. I'm going to go so far as to say that, well, that is obviously speaking of Yosha.
Mm-hmm. It's still
also speaking
of us.
Also
yeah.
speaking of us. Our light has come. And what is Yosha stood up for us? But don't we stand up? And then the whole concept of we arise, we stand up because God's lifted us, he's transformed us into light, that his light is our light, and that by his light we obtain the glorious presence and manifestation of power,
mm-hmm.
and that we shine as brilliantly as the sun. I'm convinced that Yosha was an example of what Yahweh intends for us. And that this is as accurate a depiction of Yosha as it is for all of us who are part of the covenant family. We have the glorious presence and manifestation of power of Yahweh upon us. We have the light of Yahweh upon us. Our light has come. And there's nothing more important than us arising and standing up, making a difference. Kum. You know, this is kumbaya for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Although this is kum or mm-hmm. a bow, but it is this is what it means to kumbaya, to stand mm-hmm. in Yah's light, stand with Yah, kumbaya. So, the set apart spirit provides Yahweh's garment of light. Yahweh here in this transition, and this is one of the great travesties of putting chapters in verses. This, my spirit will be upon you, my words will be in association and relationship in your mouth. That was 59, 20, and 21. And then this is a new chapter. This is 61. Well, don't you see the direct correlation between, and my spirit will be upon you, and my words, by association, will be in your mouth, and they will not depart, and arise and stand up, become light, for your light has come. Aren't these directly, one thing is the cause of the other? Isn't the glorious presence and manifestation of power of Yahweh's spirit?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
What else is going on? You know,
yeah.
I mean, you're trying to become a spiritual
right
being amplified
right
here.
Yeah, we're going to shine like the light of the sun. Did Yosha in the last when he was here in your 4,000? Yeah. Did he shine like the sun?
No.
No.
No, he didn't, did he?
But
did
upon
he
the return, he will.
Yeah, but did he arrive as light?
No,
he did not. So that being the case, he's either speaking of his return or of us between now and then, or both.
Both.
Yeah, both. Particularly when you put it in the Yosha did not need to be redeemed. We do. So when he's speaking of redemption coming to those in Jacob, I think he's speaking more to us than to him. Yeah, it's just that, you know, he provided a brilliant light on the way by being Zion. For behold, and see, darkness and obscurity will cover the earth. Oh, boys, that is true today. And a thick and heavy cloud of gross darkness will conceal the nations and the people.
We see that every day.
But Yahweh shall rise and appear, shining like light in your presence. His glorious presence and manifestation of power shall be seen in your presence and shall be upon you. The Gentiles will come to your light and kings to the brightness of your dawning light. Yashaya 62 and 3. Well, it was true that during the time that Yosha came in year 4000 Yah, Rome had seen to it that darkness and obscurity was on at least the part of the earth that they dominated, and the rest of the earth wasn't much brighter.
No.
And that man's religious and political and military institutions had imposed a cloud of gross darkness, and it concealed the nations. And but it is also true that those conditions are worse now than they were then. It's also true that the last statement, if referencing Yosha, is referencing his return. It's also true that this statement, if it is referencing Yosha, and it is also about his return. Because, once again, how is he appearing?
That's right.
Right. Did when he was here the last time, his sixth visit, did he, the predictions about him, did it say that he was going to have a glorious and brilliant appearance and that he would stand out from all men more beautiful than any other man?
Well, it's quite the opposite. There's no physical, nothing physical that stands out.
All right, so he's meeting with the disciples, and he tells them as a man who is definitely not light and did not reveal himself as light, he's telling them that he's going to return more brilliant than a constellation of stars.
That's right.
So,
yep.
So this has to be his return. So what is the time that Yahweh is predicting darkness, obscurity, and a thick and heavy cloud of grossness?
Prior to his return.
To people
just prior to his return.
Right.
Yeah.
Where are we now?
We're in the last Yobel period.
Yeah, that's the reason why I thought it was appropriate this evening that we took the long approach and we just talked about the condition of humankind.
You know, that's the condition of humankind is weird. It's to the point of weird.
It's gross.
I found it very strange that suddenly in the last two months, we've had the whole history of humanity, but in the last 2 months, the problem is that transgendered persons aren't being given enough respect. They've actually got a new series starting on TLC, and they got this little cute, looks like a 15-year-old girl or something, and she goes, "Hi, I'm Jazz, and I'm a transgendered person." And this is on the Learning Channel. This is at the very time now that the Secretary of the Navy comes out and he wants to norm transgendered persons into the military. So, you know, you've got economies falling apart. You've got wars going on all over the planet. And the big issue is that transgendered persons...
You know, there are school districts now that are trying to build transgender restrooms. Now, think about how warped that is. When you're dealing with a tiny, 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 infinitesimal fraction of 1% of humankind that is somehow confused about their sexual orientation and who have taken their sexual orientation to such an extreme that they're having many hundreds of thousand dollars of surgery. They're so vain and so focused on their sexual orientation as opposed to their spiritual orientation that their sexual orientation is the single most important thing to me. Now, you know, if somebody were to ask me, "Who are you?" I'd say, "My name is Craig. I am a member of the covenant." That's what means something to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say,
"Well,
I'm heterosexual." I'm not going to say, "My name is Craig. I used to be a Republican." No.
It's shocking the way it comes out, isn't it? And then you got Bruce Jenner starting a show. You know, all this out of
nowhere. He did the whole thing because one show he was a nobody, and all of a sudden he needs attention because of deep-seated insecurity, and yet ESPN, a sports network, gives them their hero award at the last ESPYs. How responsive is that?
Let me ask you a question. I understand what TV is exploiting, like this little girl. I mean, maybe her family is too. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, that's shock TV, and you know, they sell ads. But why is the Army doing this? What benefit is it to the Army? Not that I care what the Army does.
Not that I care.
No, I'm just saying. I sit here all my life.
This year alone, cops have gunned down and murdered 600 Americans, and only four of those cops have been indicted.
I believe
and
that.
The
we
murderers of Tamir Rice, the 12-year-old boy, aren't among them.
We're just gross. Yeah.
We are gross.
Well, they actually pick the criminals to worry about. You know, anything that's cut and dry that would be an actual, okay, you came up to the retarded guy out there in Texas and you pulled the car over and he stood up out of his chair and just had his arms out. You pulled out his gun and you executed him. Now, you know, hey, I could be involved in that riot. I wouldn't bother, and the reason I wouldn't bother is because I've walked out of Babylon. There's no fixing this.
Right.
You know, I don't care what law you pass.
I can condemn it like Yosha did, but I sure as hell not going to fix it.
No. I'm not even looking for a fix for you. If this is what you want, go ahead. I'm getting kind of like IQ. You know, you'll say something to IQ on Friday, and you'll say, "Well, what do you think about this, IQ?" And he says, "What?" And you say, "Why do you suppose this is, IQ?" And IQ will just say, "You people are crazy.
You people are crazy. Yeah, you people are just crazy." That's right. Speaking of America, you people are crazy.
Yeah, you guys are nuts.
Your government's crazy. Stupid.
Yeah, just people are stupid.
Well, no, I mean, that is true. I mean, what he's saying is true. Look, we just had one of our employees that got an associate from living over in England. He had to come over here for a few weeks to get some things settled, and I let him stay here. And all he ever went on about was the outrageousness that's going on in the government. And I
his or ours?
Both. I mean, he understands that, you know, it's the same animal. Sure. It's really England that wags America, if the truth be told, if you're to believe all the people that have the inside. But I sit there and I look at that and I go, I said to him, I said, David, I said, what in the world does it matter?
Right.
Yeah, Obama's a psychopath and he's a narcissist, and you know, so what?
So is Bush.
So what's the next guy going to be? What do you think?
So was Clinton before him.
They just accidentally get
there? So was Bush before him. So was Reagan before him.
That's right. And
you know,
you pointed that out
before him.
Yeah. And Carter, by the way, even over in England, they picked a guy. You know why they picked Carter? You know why they picked Carter? They picked Carter because he had had three mental breakdowns, and he was very easy to control.
To manipulate.
Yeah, he was a nut.
Peanut farmer. It was a
nut. Didn't we start with a 33-degree Mason?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was that,
George
too.
Washington. Yeah, George Washington.
George Washington, yeah.
Well, it's just what I'm saying there is that I said, so, okay, so we've determined that the leaders of the world are serious criminals.
Right.
I mean, that's how they got there.
The founders of all religions, as are the leaders of all religions.
Yeah, you know, but, I mean, we figured that out. I said, so, David, what do we do now? I said, I can tell you, there's only one out that I know of, and it's Yahweh. And he said, oh, yeah, I believe what you're saying about Yahweh. Oh, yeah, thank you for introducing me to that. Didn't care a bit about it.
Wow.
He just, you can show people fact, after reality. After a while, I just didn't really want to talk to the guy about anything important.
The answer all the time is true. We are in such a dark and gross world that there's only one square deal in town. There's only one offer that is genuinely trustworthy. Only one. Everybody else has got their own thing. They're just as soon cheat you as anything else. I mean, I won't mention who the individual is, but I will tell you that I have a good friend that is single, and therefore dates a fair amount, and that every girl that he goes out with is genuinely certifiable, nuts, I mean, psychotic, dishonest, threatening, menacing. I mean, we're not just talking about a little bit weird. We're not talking about quirky. We're talking about maybe 30 in a row, psychotic.
You told him to stop using Christian Mingle, right? Sorry.
I did a post on that.
I can tell you some of the. If I were to tell you the stories first, I would be breaking in confidence. But
yeah,
I won't tell you the stories. But I'll just tell you that we're dealing with psychopaths.
Wow.
It's an indication, I think, of what has happened to the grossness of humankind. It is. There's a thick and heavy cloud of grossness, darkness.
And obscurity.
It covers the earth. And it is in that grossness and darkness that the light of Yahweh not only shines now, because he shines through us, through his word, when we cite his word as we're doing now, but also upon his return.
By the way, the Yobel, you know, by putting all that together the way you did, is kind of astounding, really. But it also shows it's not a missed possibility. I mean, it's just all right there.
It's right there. Yeah, it's really consistent that anytime you, if you take the approach of following his example and how he uses words, for example, yo in the 40 names and repeats them 700 times, and then he introduces Yobel. One of the things about being honest is your consistency.
Is it really 700 times, by the way?
Yeah, 700 times. 40 names, 700 times.
That's just another insane.
So he is consistent. And so it's really the likelihood of being wrong in interpreting what he has to say, if you pay attention to the examples that he sets, is pretty slim. You're gonna get it right most of the time if you just say, you know, I'm gonna listen to what he has to say and pay especially close attention, and recognize that what he says is always true. He never varies. It's always consistent.
He wants you to shamar and keep doing it. He doesn't say you got to get it real quick and then move on. I mean, he wanted you to have it consistent.
And the thing that he quoted for the Yobel, didn't he say that the purpose of the lamb, the sacrificial lamb, was to remove our iniquity? That our deaths would fall upon him, and isn't that the purpose of the Yobel?
Mm-hmm. That's pretty clear who he's pointing at there. There's no accident. It's astounding to me. I don't think that anybody who seriously studies Torah, you know, even in Rabbinic Judaism, when they see stuff like that, and they just pretend it doesn't exist.
Doesn't Yahweh refer to himself as our shepherd, particularly with the name, for example, El, the shortened and singular form of Eloah, El,
the lamb. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is he's a ram who is a shepherd. It's Aleph Lamed, which is that he is the lamb with the Aleph, but he's also the shepherd. But if he's the shepherd, doesn't it make us sheep?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's all right there. I just don't understand how people can overlook it. It's like I was saying, okay, let's say I'm a Christian. Let's say I'm a Christian. I mean, let's not. Let's pretend. And the bottom line is that the first place, you know, the first time I understood that when Yahusha spoke, he went and talked about the Yobel, was in Yada Yah.
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. I went to all these churches all these years, and they didn't even know what he went into when he walked into the temple and started teaching. I mean, aren't they supposed to be paying attention to what he's doing?
Yeah. What day, by the way, was it that he went in?
On a
Shabbat. By the way, does that mean that the Shabbat is a, if he's a perfectly Torah observant, does that mean that the Shabbat is a day to do nothing? Or did he have to walk into the synagogue on the Shabbat, open a scroll, and read from it?
That's what he did.
Right. And by the way,
I think we did too, didn't we?
Yeah. So aren't we doing the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we are. We had one fellow, real good kid, that's jumped into the group at Unpopular, that. He says, you know, he just wasn't getting this, you know, and don't do the work of, you know, of the Masiyah.
The
Heavenly Messenger.
Right.
Right, which is the Masiyah. So, yeah. So what I
saw. Right.
Yeah, it says Malacca. Yeah, and what I said is, interestingly enough, although we understand Yahweh is not a religious deity, most people who have learned his name or even learned his Shabbat, they still don't know he's not a religious deity. That's where they're missing the mark, more than anything. And so what do? They go to meet in some place with religious imagery and everything else. Let's say you're a Seventh-day Adventist, as an example. Mm-hmm. And you still have a whore that you pay, right, on Shabbat or whatever. I think what Yah was saying there, more, when he's talking about this work not to do, is don't go out there and pretend to be some kind of religious teacher, you know, making a payday. I mean, that's
right.
What I think it means.
Right.
I mean, that's really where I think he's coming from. In other words, don't go out and play like you're me. Don't go out and act like you're the teacher. You're not the teacher. I'm the teacher.
Yeah, and by the way,
pretty sure that's
the,
what that
the
means.
Malaka is the feminine of Malak.
Okay?
It's the feminine.
Don't do the work
of
a set apart spirit.
There you go.
Yeah, they're in churches all day long having a Holy Spirit. And I believe it is the Holy Spirit. I believe it's the spirit of the Sun God Festival of Christmas.
Yeah.
Well, we can't do the work he did. I mean, we're not doing the work he did. We are reading and shamaring the Torah, which
and they're not either, but they're doing
the work that he did. But the work of the set apart spirit is work that is something we can't even approximate, touch.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of things that Yosha did in terms of the example that he set of citing the Torah and prophets, of being Torah observant, that we can do. And we, too, can open the scroll of Yashayah on the Shabbat, as we're doing, and read from it. There's lots of things that we can do because Yosha was the diminished human manifestation of Yahuwah. But there is nothing that the set-apart spirit does that we can do. We can't give spiritual life. We can point people to her, but we can't do her job.
Now, that's what's written in the instruction, because isn't that what religious people do on that day?
Right.
Or
right.
Whatever day.
She purifies. She brings life. She covers. She adorns us. All the stuff that she does, there is nothing in her job description that we can do.
Possibly do.
Right.
Nor should we imitate it.
Right.
I mean, I can't pretend to
be doing. We shouldn't be doing baptisms, because, you know, that's the idea of your
cleaning. Good idea.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, those are the things I look at, and that's how I see it. He's telling us, don't present this in some kind of religious fashion,
right.
And don't present yourself as some kind of a religious teacher.
What was the second statement that Yahweh etched in stone? Don't be caught anywhere around the religious material. Don't bow down in a religious setting. Don't speak for gods in a religious setting. Don't be associated with any of the trimmings of religion. Yeah, here, did Yahweh say, this is my religion? Or did he say, this is my covenant?
No, he said, we're even empowered by the covenant, the family.
Right,
the family.
Yeah. He said, this is my covenant, my relationship. He didn't say, this is my religion. The only time that he ever speaks of religion is when he's condemning it, like he's condemning it in the second statement that he etched in stone. Yeah, so. No, God doesn't have a religion. He hates
No, I know that. But I'm just,
yeah.
You know, that is the defining, I don't know, it's the line that separates us from nearly everybody. You know, there's plenty of people that learn
relationship versus religion.
And then they run around carrying Yahweh's name in a, you know, truly a religious fashion. I see it all the time.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. Yeah, because Yahweh's name is so poorly known, it is a shame that some of those who know it misappropriate it. You know, one of the worst of all, of course, is that some of the ultimate redneck, skinhead, neo-Nazi types, you know, refer to, you know, themselves as the Brothers of Yahweh, for example. I mean, they're
really
got to be kidding me.
No. There were, in fact, 10 years ago, there must have been 50 militias that were all Yahweh militias, and you know, they'd have Nazi flags and American flags, and you know, they in guns we trust, and no, Yahweh's name is misappropriated a lot.
Well, truly it is. Truly it is. Yeah. There's nothing quite as bad as a skinhead hate group. I actually had one of them tell me that Hitler was pretty much the smartest man on the planet. I said, so,
why
you're going to tell me You're going to tell me a guy that got 60 million people killed and his own country destroyed was brilliant? Are you serious?
Right.
You know, I mean, how could anybody even make such a statement? He was walking death, and he had a bunch of idiots that followed him.
A guy that blamed all of Germany's problems on Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, smart.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
A guy that that authorized the Final Solution and ran the concentration camps in which 12 million people were sacrificed, murdered, was smart.
I guess that's their idea of smart.
Sure.
Apparently. I mean, if that guy was so smart, how was he destroyed? How is it his entire country was destroyed? Because they chose to follow him. I mean, think about that.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't even get 12 million people killed in concentration camps like Sobibor and Treblinka and the rest. He didn't just do that. He managed to destroy his whole country in the process. I mean, had he come out a winner, I could have seen some secularist arguing that he was brilliant, but he came out a total loser.
Yeah, but you know, look at the people who are considered winners. Hadrian.
Yeah, I was about to go to Rome.
You know, probably in the top five most hated people of all time. Look at Rabbi Akiba. Look at Paul and being, you know, having 13 letters that are part of the Christian New Testament. I mean, these are societal winners that God hates. Look at the number of people that follow in the footsteps of Muhammad. You know, societal winners that God detests. Insane liars. Stupid people, really. I mean, Paul, Muhammad, Akiba, we're all stupid. I mean, really dumb. Hadrian, dumb.
Akiba seemed devious.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he was completely ignorant, but he was very devious.
They're all devious. Yeah, they're all devious.
Well, that's true, but I mean in a kind of a slick way. You know, I mean, it was
that Akiba was slicker, was brighter by a considerable amount than Paul, for example. And Paul was more devious, more clever than was Muhammad. And Hadrian was probably more clever than any of those. I mean, Hadrian was really clever. His idea that he would lure Jews back into Jerusalem by promising to rebuild the city and the temple, and that when they came back in announcing that, oh, I'm going to rebuild Jerusalem in my own name, and the temple's going to be for me, of course, that got them to revolt, and he got his Final Solution.
I think that was
clever. Devious, but clever.
I don't think Paul was that swift up in the head. Because he was dealing with people who knew the Torah, and they dismissed him, and that's why he wound up with nothing.
Yeah.
Now the people who picked up his philosophy and ran with it, the Marcions and all, they took it to the Roman Empire, and they built Paul into.
Well, they built.
But, I mean, he couldn't tell it because he was dealing with so many of the Yehudim.
Right. That's right. That's why I say Paul, he was slick, but not that bright. And even really looking at his extant writings, I mean, for anybody to confuse them with something that would be, you know, from a supreme being, I mean, it's just insane on its face.
I have previously viewed Paul as a clever one because society has so adopted him and incorporated his philosophy that it's easy to be lured into this darkness by Paul. But once you figure him out, you have no respect for him. You don't see clever. You don't see logical. You don't see rational. You don't see...
Just pure evil.
You just see that he was so blinded by his ego. Mm-hmm. And he was so demonically twisted and so irrational that, you know, you read Romans, which was his great treatise, and the arguments that he makes in Romans 7 against the Torah has got to be the lamest, most ridiculous, irrational argument that anyone has ever made that has maintained any international prestige. Yeah, he was stupid. I have no respect for that scumbag.
Well, he relied. Not that evil people don't, but he relied on complete ignorance. I mean, that's what he relied on.
He preyed on complete ignorance.
And it was a safe bet. A safe bet, apparently.
But he preyed on ignorance and on a very warped prejudice.
Did you ever hear him quote the Torah accurately?
No. No, of course he never did. But the Greeks and the Romans hated the Jews. So he preyed on the prejudice of Greeks and Romans, as well as the ignorance of Greeks and Romans. So. And he played right to their proclivities, which was Gnosticism and their sun god mentality with Dionysus and Bacchus. So he took advantage of them. That's for darn sure.
But Hitler did the same thing. He was in an
environment. Yeah, he told people what they wanted to hear. Told people what they wanted to hear. And Mein Kampf would not have been popular if he didn't tell them what they wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Boy, talk about darkness and obscurity.
Well, anyway, thank you. That was a very, 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 very good.
Yobel is rich. Yeah, the rope. Yobel.
I never realized it was that rich, but that's astounding, really.
Yeah, Yobel's rich, and my sense and my parting thought is that. Well, I've always seen this presentation of the Yobel as being prophetic of Yosha. I think we can apply it to ourselves. I think it is prophetic of this is the covenant.
The
this
covenant
is what Yahweh is enabling in the covenant. It is descriptive of us.
Wow.
Good thing. Good thing to be God's kid.
You ain't kidding.
Yeah. All right, fellas.
Enjoyed it very much. Thank you, Yada. Thank you, Larry.
Yeah. Good night.
Have a good seventh.
You too. Yeah, you betcha. Bye-bye.
Okay,
bye-bye.